Accession number 20970, Reel 2.
Reel 2.
Daily transports were taken from the camp to Theresienstadt by train. And we were in the train when an air raid came, and the target was that railway line. And we were in the locked wagons while the railway line was bombed to smithereens. And the several trains were standing in the railway yard at the time, and ours didn't get direct hits, but we couldn't be taken to Theresienstadt because the line had been destroyed. But that is much later. Anyhow, so there we were, as we later realized, among those 20,000 or so Jews who were not taken to extermination camps. But we went to a transit camp called Strasshof near Vienna. Very large, tens of thousands of people were held there, as we understood, prisoners of war as well as Jews. We arrived after, I would say, the worst of my life's experiences. A journey of 4 days. We were in cattle wagons, closed wagons, 104 of us in the wagon. There wasn't enough space to sit down. Many people had to stand throughout. There was neither food nor drink. And of course, there were no toilets. And this was June, hot summer. And by the time we arrived in Strasshof from Debrecen, many people died along the way. I don't think it's necessary for me to explain to you what the conditions in these wagons were. It could be easily, or maybe not easily, imagined. In case this is of particular interest, I would be able to tell you some of the details, but I don't feel that I should dwell on this now. I would say by far the worst experience of my whole life was this. My family at that time comprised 11 members, and we stayed together, all 11 of us. The constitution of the family is of importance. There was my father, who was in his early 40s, my mother, who was with her sisters in their early 30s. In fact, one of her sisters was in her late 20s still. There was my cousin, who was 2 and a half. My mother's cousin, who was my mother's contemporary, and her little son, who was 3. And then there were my 2 grandmothers, and my cousin's grandmother, and that constituted the family. After Strasshof, we were in work camps, and the rules were that those who worked got food rations and those who didn't. Clearly the babies did not work. Quite often the 3 grandmothers couldn't work. although they did what they could, amazingly resilient and heroic they were, especially my mother's mother. I would think our survival depended ultimately, quite critically, on her ingenuity, and I shall tell you about this a little later. But they really were not in the regular workforce, so that would be out of the 11 of us, 5 people being either too young or too old to get food rations. And I should not have really worked either, because the bottom age from which you could work was 14, and I was 11. But I was strong, and I was fairly tall for my age. And I said I was 14, and nobody asked too many questions. And in this way, there were, out of 11 of us, 6 getting food rations to be divided among us. And the food rations were too small even for one-to-one, let alone for 6 food rations to be shared amongst 11. Well, our first place of work was an agricultural camp. It was a state-owned farm, very near Vienna, practically within the city walls, just under the radio transmitter tower of Vienna. And we did all the seasonal work. It started with picking peas. It went on to digging up carrots. The heaviest work by far was harvesting. In the same camp were Ukrainian volunteer workers. They were people used to agricultural work, unlike my own family. They were strong, and they were better fed than we were. And the harvest was such that what is this instrument called? The hand cutting
scythe.
That's right. There was a man going, a Ukrainian man going in front, cutting the wheat down with his scythe, and following was a Hungarian Jewish woman tying it up into bundles. Well, my young Ukrainian was impatient with me. I couldn't keep up with him, and he beat me with his leather belt to urge me along. This was found quite amusing by the SS guard. Now, this camp was interesting. The manager of the camp was an Austrian of with Germanic values. He ran a tight ship. He ran a good farm. He was not cruel. He was efficient in using whatever resources were available to him. And he had no interest in us, certainly no sympathy for us, but he was not systematically cruel. He, as we later realized, was a father of a family of 4. On the farm, he had a beautiful home, and very briefly I worked in his home, and that would be, I shall tell you, that was an interesting episode in my camp life. But he was an agronomist. He ran the farm with complete understanding of what he was doing. We were impressed. His assistant, though, was a young uniformed SS officer. He was an agronomy student. He had to be called Herr Praktikant, and he was the one who committed some of the atrocities. It was difficult for example, not to taste the grapes while we were harvesting grapes because we were starving. There was food ration, like I told you, but always, always too small. And he had his revolver on the ready, and he shot at my feet once. I tried to steal some grapes for my baby cousin, and he deliberately missed my foot by a couple of inches. But I was sure that if I tried it again, he would next time not miss. And the way he spoke with us is the way you would see in films SS address Jews. He was young, blonde, and handsome. The work was generally heavy. Sometimes we had to walk to distant fields, which was fine, and then come back at the end of the day from the distant fields all the way up the hill where our camp was underneath the transmitter tower. And to walk up the hill after a 14-hour working day was sometimes more than I felt I could bear. At lunchtime, we were given some food in the middle of the day. At lunchtime, many of us didn't sit down because we felt that it would be so hard to stand up afterwards. The tiredness was leaden. There were particularly heavy parts of the work, like, for example, picking sugar beets. This was the last job in the camp, seasonally speaking. You pick the sugar beets after the frost had come, and apparently the slight frost makes the sugar content in some way increase. So sugar beets are large root vegetables, but a foot and a half long, maybe a foot long. You dig them out of the clayey soil, which is sodden with the sleet, which is by then falling. Then you have to get the two beets together, and you bang them together so that the mud drops off it, and then you throw it into the pile. Now the mud drops off it and onto your clothes, and it freezes on, and your clothes are not that wonderful anyway, so it's a bit difficult. We were given at the beginning, we were given boots, wooden sole, and some kind of paper-like material. It would be plastic now. At that time, plastic did not yet exist. That would be the top. And these boots were given to us at Strasshof, at the holding camp where we were first taken. The boots were of one size, size 42. My feet at that time were size 32 or 33. I have very small feet. All my family have very small feet. And so you had these enormous boots. They were not very easy to walk in. And then the thick wooden sole began to wear off. Most people walked with an uneven gait. So you wore your shoes in such a way that the heel was worn off on one side and on the other. And we began to realize that soon the sole will be worn out altogether on the one side. And then my cousin, my mother's cousin, had this brilliant invention. How about wearing the boots on the wrong foot, exchanging the two boots, so that we can then start wearing again the outside of the heel, but this time there was more to wear. It wasn't easy. While we were in this camp, our food supply was supplemented by kindly local Austrians who helped us, some systematically, some casually. I was small and agile. I sneaked out of the camp. On some Sundays, the practicant was not on duty, and nobody took that seriously, the business of guarding us, although we were fenced around. And I sneaked down from the hill to the local villages, and I went begging from house to house. And normally, sometimes I was chased away, but normally I was given some scraps of food. There's a lot of squabbling in my family over food, because everybody wanted the others to eat the food rather than themselves. But there was no contest. Everyone's first priority was the saving of the two babies. And so anything I got, I took back, and we then distributed it according to the priority system. Even now, we have the family saying, "I divide, you choose." Well, and my aunt, one of my aunts, had made a friend with a lady who had a goat and lived in a hovel in a little shack. She was a royalist, and she hated the Nazis because she was a royalist. And she gave my aunt goat's milk, something like once a week, if she managed to smuggle it in. On a few occasions, we even sneaked out of the camp and went into Vienna itself. And on one occasion, I was with my mother and one of my aunts. We were signaled to by a man on the street, and he pulled us along one side, and we thought he was maybe some secret agent or, you know, some kind of a Nazi who realized that we were Jews and what will happen, goodness me. But it wasn't the case. This was a Hungarian gypsy musician who lived in Vienna, and he did realize that we were Jews. He overheard us speaking, or how he knew we were Hungarians. And from then on, he quite systematically stole food into the camp for us. And was immensely helpful. If not only because of the food, but because of the human touch, it gave us a certain amount of confidence. I remember his name. He was called Imre Bokor. And we tried to find him after the war, but we could not. He was a gypsy musician. I also remember the name of the lady, the royalist lady, Frau Doleschal. Only later did I realize that among the skilled agricultural workers, Austrians, there was a socialist. And he and my father built up some kind of a relationship, which was more dangerous for the Austrian than for my father, because he had more to lose. And he supplied information for my father about some of the details of what went on in the war. My father was the only one who knew that there were extermination camps. And that information came to him from this Austrian socialist, whose name I remember too. He was called Pavlicek. It's a Slav name, but he was an Austrian. I am not aware that Pavlicek ever gave us anything. It might have been for him too dangerous to do that, but he certainly supplied information for my father and companionship to some extent, which my father told me later on. An incident that I recall of this agricultural camp is when the carrot picking was finished. Carrot picking was a process of people turning over by a plow, turning over the field, and then you collected the carrots into sacks and off they took them. And that was finished. The remainder in the field, people thought might be still worth picking up. Who knows if a few pieces might be. So the children were commandeered out, and I was told that I am to be in charge of a team of children between the age of 14 and 10. And they were given little shovels and little bags, and I had to make sure that they pick out the carrots and so on. And the grown-ups were at that time down in some other field. I was not keen on this children's party task, but that was what I had to do. And this was very near our camp on the top of the hill. And suddenly I looked up and I found interesting streaky patterns in the sky. That was the first time I saw those lines drawn by high-flying aircraft.
Condensation
lines. And I was just pointing out to the children, look, how interesting, when the bombing started. And on that occasion, the target was the transmitter, which was the center of our own camp. And the bombs were falling everywhere. It was my first encounter with bombs. And the children were scattered here and there, and I tried to keep them together. And the animals were going crazy in the barns, and they let the horses loose, and all hell broke loose, and panic and chaos. That was just an incident worth mention. I was on one occasion ill, and I couldn't work. I was sufficiently ill and recognized to be ill that I couldn't go out to work on the fields. And I spoke German, and that is when the Verwalter, the manager of the farm, said that I should work in the office. That's how I ever got into the house. And this was fantastic. I enjoyed the work. And what I had to do was to compile the shopping list for the whole farm. They took 2 weekly trips by ox cart down on the steep side of the hill, rather than the shallow side where some of the fields were, down to a nearby village and buy provisions. And these provisions included animal foods as well as foods for people, and there was a caravan of several ox carts going down to the village with the list I made. And there was no money involved because the farm had an account, but I had to supervise. Aged 11, I still think it's wonderful that he trusted me. I had to supervise the weighing of the provisions and the piling of the stuff onto the ox carts, and then I had to come back with these ox carts, each cart being driven by one of the Ukrainian peasants, and then the provision was put in its place. And it took me a day to compile the shopping list according to the Verwalter's instructions, and it took another day to accomplish the whole trip, the shopping trip. And this was the highlight of the whole camp experience, agricultural camp experience. One of the lowlights was when the grandmothers were commandeered to I don't know the word. What do you call the animal droppings? They make a compost heap, but it's not just the compost heap of
dung.
Dung, and yes, that's right. This dung from cows, from horses, from pigs, from whatever, and any kind of refuse. This was all piled up in an enormous heap in
yes,
the middle.
So we call it a midden.
Midden? I don't know the word. This was an enormous rectangle, at least in my memory, it was a huge rectangular area in the middle of the farmyard. On one side of the farmyard was the animal houses, and on top of them was, on top of the ladder, where we slept. And on either side, there were farm buildings of various sorts. Well, and the ox cart could circumnavigate this compost heap, and the grandmothers were one day commandeered to put into carts the compost with a pitchfork. And it was all right at the beginning, but later on, as the compost heap got lower and lower, the wall of the heap was taller than the level at which they stood, so they had to lift the pitchfork, and the juice was pouring down their clothing and their hair, and there was my tiny, wonderful grandmother covered in dung. My grandmother knew about farms and farming. She was herself an agronomist's daughter, and she was brought up in farms. Her husband was the manager of one of the baronial estates, and she was brought up by governesses with her sisters and brothers in this farm. And she knew what was edible and what wasn't. And so to walk through a forest with my grandmother was a fantastic source of supplementary food. She would know roots, even how you can dislodge the bark and get some of the sap out of trees, which berries were edible, and so on. She was inventive, and she sustained us. Anyhow, finally, the agricultural work was finished because the season shut down. This was late November. And then it was decided that we were to transfer to a factory camp. Now, that would involve going down from the hill by Oxcart, and then going with some other conveyance. I don't recall clearly.